Hey folks, we had the pleasure of interviewing Ryan Moll, an entrepreneur and marketing leader who recently discovered his neurodivergent identity. In this episode, Ryan enlightens us on his own personal reflection, how it's shaped his entrepreneurial journey, and dives into the profound impact this revelation has had on him personally and professionally. We discuss the spiky profiles of entrepreneurs and how everyone can embrace the power of neurodiversity in their workforce. Let's go.
Entrepreneur Shit is a podcast by and for entrepreneurs. We talk to founders and innovators about the shit they're going through and how they work through the reality of building a business.
What is it, 7 times more likely that an entrepreneur is ADHD, and there's another six times that they're ASD, autistic. But the other side of the shoulder is, and this is what we've heard twice from our, from my children, and it was the same thing for me, is the, you have the, I don't know how to say this. I want to be careful, but you know, there's some of the kids, there's a term called twice exceptional, where they're very bright, but the school, so they're very smart, but the school system isn't really set up for them. So they may have, you know, my daughter or myself, I had high energy. I'm a verbal processor. So you look back at my old grade and it always says, Ryan can't stop talking. Ryan can't stop talking. That's a problem in a classroom, but that's how I learn. So they would stunt, they would, you know, push me down on how I learned because I had to process. And there's, so there wasn't support systems to, for the, you know, the Richard Bransons or, you know, the Mark Cubans.
It's
like,
it's a one size fits all system. And it's a system that reacts exactly the way I just did, where it was like,
you're dumb.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. You're calling our listener base dumb. And it's like, nah, that's the way the system reacts.
That's what a neurotypical person would say.
I'm indoctrinated in the way that's like, you're gonna tell like the kids that were bouncing off the walls, or the kids that got the write-ups on their grade reports that were like, you can't stop talking, please talk to him at home about shutting up or whatever. And it's like,
I feel like in retrospect I was that kid who couldn't shut up, and I feel bad for my teachers because like they were just trying to do their jobs and I was the one who disrupting class. Everyone else. And it wasn't necessarily my fault, but it also was like the teacher was set up for failure. I was set up for failure.
It's a system thing. It's a system thing, which goes back to the whole 10, you know, the X-Genesis. It's about, you know, systems theory and so forth. And Klupt was to try and help in that space because I knew the schools couldn't do it. So how do you get it at home?
Thank you for bringing us back. I mean, that was a full circle. It's good. But you're bringing it back to, so was Klupt designed by your own experience in some ways? Like, are these notes, when you're talking about, like, I had these ideas and I was writing down these notes, was part of Klupt's inspiration based upon your own experience?
My dad is very similar to me. And he was very innovative at Indiana University. And he created this thing called CASEL, which was the Center of Academic Student Leadership. And it was for all the kids that were in extracurricular activities at Indiana University. And he built this whole training of, what are you learning from this? And they built a whole class credits around this concept of, what are you learning when you're the captain of the lacrosse team? What are you learning if you're the executive director of a fraternity or something? And and it was training around that. So that's, I drew inspiration from that. So
did your dad design that, do you think, based upon his experience?
Yes.
Raising you?
No, from his own raising experience. Himself.
Okay.
I think he recognized I don't think he'd be upset by this, but he's an undiagnosed, probably ADHD, ASD, dyslexic person who, somehow, he basically said, I memorized the textbooks to get through college. You know, and so he, if it wasn't for his sports.
Can't retain any of it.
Well, any, who knows? I don't know. Back then, you know, he's in his 80s now. What were they? I don't know. They were in a different world, but he had to learn how to operate. And I think the sports, what he learned on how to teamwork and leadership and all that stuff, which translated into a successful career for him, the soft skills. It's all soft skill development that gets taught when you have to wake up early and train for 2 extra hours and it sucks and you build resilience, you know, and there's just all those things that are not taught when you have, you know, what is 4 plus 4 and who, you know, what was the cause of World War II? That's facts.
Yeah.
You know, that's what's happening in school is retaining memory and facts and then some critical thinking, but not even that. So,
and when the reality of why World War II was caused is they didn't have SEL in Germany.
Yeah. And Hitler didn't get accepted to the art school. If they had maybe accepted him, and he wouldn't have been a failure. No,
I'm just would have been a poet.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
We have progressed.
Yeah.
So what happened after Kloop?
Yeah. So. Eventually we want to get to kind of, I think your understanding of kind of what's driven some of your entrepreneurial experiences so far, but. What happened with Kloop? You ran with that for a while.
Yeah, I ran with that for a while, and I just knew that I wasn't going to have to spend the money on building the MVP. I couldn't cut it down enough to really utilize where I knew the learning opportunities were there for for kids. Mm-hmm. And I think the biggest thing is I read this book called The Mom Test, and The Mom Test teaches you to talk to people about their, you know, the problem. And the best thing, you know, my favorite thing was as you talk to parents, and I don't remember all the lessons I was supposed to learn, but is there a problem with kids on their phones now, you know, on their smartphones? Yes, it's a major problem. 100% of the parents
that I interviewed. If you ask them that pointed question.
Yes. And they'd say, yes, there's a problem. Is there a problem with your child? Nope.
Definitely not.
80% of them said no.
Really?
No, of course. My kids' cell phone
and they
usage.
Didn't. And I remember my favorite one was, so the kid was like 14, 13. I know for a fact I was around that kid. That kid was on his phone 8 to 13 hours a day.
Oh, the Lord. Fragility of the
and
ego.
Yet that parent literally was like, no. And really? And that was all of them, though. All of them were like that. And so I realized no one's going to buy this. No one is going to buy this because they don't want to recognize their own problem. Everybody else has the problem.
So you were targeting like the consumer, the individual parent.
Because I knew that school wouldn't buy it. I knew they couldn't. I knew they wanted it because I talked to teachers, but the school wouldn't buy this.
Well, in that sales cycle, talking to Joe over here, I know. Is 9, 12, 24 months.
Well, I remember when we've talked about it, I've thought, oh boy, I wouldn't want to deal with that.
Yeah.
We found a workaround, but the problem, again, not about me, this podcast. I've talked too much on this podcast.
About IEPs. So Kloop is just kind of shelved though right now, right?
Oh, yeah. It's dead.
It's dead, okay. But then that sort of transferred into the next idea.
Yeah, I think the next idea was more around, and I'd sat on this one for a while, it's funny, it had kind of come out of a conversation with my sister, who's a therapist, in knowing that each one of her meetings with her clients or the patient, in the therapist world, you call them clients. Some people would make they think they're a patient, but each meeting was different on its level of intensity. And she would manage her day in a manner that would be okay. So I'm going to use Joe. Let's say Joe had some major trauma and was bipolar. So in her mind, on a scale of 1 to 10, he
just diagnosed Joe.
Yeah. No, but let's say I'm going to go around the room here though. And Joe is he's a 9 out of 10, meaning like this is an intense one. So I can't put another tough one right behind her. So let's put Eric.
Oh, I remember this.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. And so let's put Eric, who maybe is just having you know, he just goes to counseling because he's just sad, he's a sad boy. He wants to be a better person, and he's just going to therapy to like getting his teeth cleaned. You know, he's just doing it to, you know, he's got every person challenges. So he's a 3. So I can put that in there. The next one's Ryan, and he's got ADHD and ASD. So let's give him a 5. And in her mind, that's how she was mm-hmm. not putting numbers to it. But her and I talked about this. Mm-hmm.
That's how she was structuring her schedule for the week.
Yeah. Yes. She was trying to, because she knew she couldn't put 3 back to back really hard ones because yeah, she was
a human too.
Be yeah. 3 hours. Well,
as she used to say, my tool is my brain.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if that thing wears down by the end, the tool doesn't work. So then Joe is having the worst day of his life that day. He becomes a 10. Your dog gets hit by a car that day. Whoa, and your wife leaves you, and now you're an 8, and I'm having a bad day. So it's not only in the day, but it's just the cumulative effect of this. And she has people outside scheduling things for her and so on and so forth. So at first this got built for therapists. Mm-hmm. Then as I was working on it in that process and learning about this, I realized there was somebody created something called autistic energy accounting. And I realized these were some of these conversations over the time. Oh, my sister's ASD. So am I. And we realized that's
what. But did you know that at that point?
No, not when I started.
Okay.
But I was finding that out in this process. There was some discovery happening.
This is what you learned about yourself or your sister?
Both.
Oh.
You
didn't know this about your sister either.
She didn't either.
Whoa.
The whole autism ASD for people that, are verbal and may have been diagnosed ADHD. This is all happening in the last 2 years. This is all changing right now. There's so many people that are on the spectrum that don't know they're on the spectrum. Some of them can be sitting in this room. Mm-hmm. So many people are not aware that they are because they're like, well, I can talk. What used to be called Asperger's is now gone, and it's in the spectrum of autism it's a spectrum. It is huge. Mm-hmm. The saying is, if you've met one autistic person, you've met one autistic person, meaning my autism may be completely different than my daughter's or my son's or my friend. I mean, it's a spectrum, and they're really figuring out some things on how our brain processes information is very different. I'm very direct. Mm-hmm. I really struggle with me lying or anybody else lying to me. Mm-hmm. It breaks down some of the logic stuff. Most people, when they think autistic, though, they think of the typical nonverbal child who, maybe rocks or mm-hmm. something. That's the vision. And it's very the rain different.
Man,
like, yes. Very, very different. Now you're realizing, Elon Musk's on there. Oh, you're probably looking at Zuckerberg and mm-hmm. pretty much a lot of entrepreneurs. A lot of them. A lot of entrepreneurs.
Isn't Sam Altman openly? He talks about it, doesn't he?
So does Musk.
Yeah.
Well, Musk says he's Asperger's.
Yeah.
And which is no longer, they don't even use that term. Anyway, long story short.
Why did they stop using that term? What was the...
I have no idea. It's all changing right now. It's changing so fast to even find a behavioral health specialist or a therapist or somebody that's actually credible and capable and has been trained on how to assess it is extremely hard to find. I'm just fortunate.
Because there's so much variation.
And it's new and it's changing.
Yeah.
So
when this was starting to... Well, we got a little derailed from the venture that sort of spun out of this.
Totally different. It didn't spin out of Klooped. It was
right. But working with your sister, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so you having kind of this personal realization, working with your sister, and kind of understanding more of the nuances of the autism spectrum,
and what I had built based upon that. Yeah.
Yeah. So can you? Give us a quick elevator pitch for the what was this slider?
It was called Blocked. Was the final name of it?
Okay,
self care slider was started to be kind of focused on the
self care,
but that was initially sort of focused on the
therapist
world,
and then it started switching to. Then I realized that's too small.
Yeah,
I could go after everybody, and I
remember some of the conversations we had back then. I was like, dude, this sounds like. I mean, anybody could use that, right? It's like, oh, I got this brutal fucking call coming up. So don't schedule anything for the next 4 hours because I'm going to need a big break after this call with my boss.
I'm even going to tell you guys, I'm not even going to go into it much because I'm not even going to describe it too much because it's still sitting on a shelf.
And it's still needs to exist.
And it's still a little stealthy. And I went through the process of getting up. I had a friend who was head of IP for LG. He connected me with their IP patent lawyer out of DC, and he basically said, I'm not going to work with you unless and do the patent pending work unless I think you've got something really big, because I'm not going to make any money off you for the $3,000, $5,000 work. I'm only going to make money from you if you're doing this and you become a real patent and it gets big. So I'm going to do some research because you're friends of, you know, a friend, and I'll look at it. And he took it on. He goes, you've got something.
Cool.
And when I built it and I started working on it, what was amazing is I had a friend who is, and I won't bring his up name or anything like that, but he was a VC person who used to be a former VP in the whole Salesforce world.
Yeah.
We signed our NDAs. He looked at it because he was in the HR space. And I'm like, do you think this could work? He was trying to throw money at me. He was like, I'm going to just give you money. Don't worry about it. And at that's where it got big. And that's when it started. The wheel started coming off.
So,
oh,
yeah.
Now I'm interested. I mean, I was interested the whole time, but now I'm really invested. Yeah. Not like financially.
Well, what was interesting is I built it. And so I had hired out a technical partner, a company to help me build it. Had gotten the patent pending work. They said, you've got something. This thing's good. I mean, the guy was kind of excited for me, the patent lawyer. He's like,
this was kind of in process when we got together.
Oh, 2 years ago.
2 years ago?
Like, we were talking about that earlier. It was like 2 years ago when we were hanging out. Yeah.
Yeah. So this was kind of in the works at that point. So
totally in the works, got into it in around summer of end of 21, beginning of 22, I spent a lot of time on it. And I started working. I built it, was changing the branding, switching from the therapist, going to the bigger space. And I got all the product work done with the technical partner. And so I was just sitting there alone with this product. I outsourced it.
Yeah.
I worked with somebody because pandemic, you know, 2021. It was hard to meet people. So you hadn't met anybody or built anything. And it was still hard to meet with people. So I just found a technical partner that someone referred to me, helped me build the whole thing out. And at that point, then in the spring of, I really started struggling when I built version one of it in the fall of 20, right at the end of the year 21. And in the spring, I changed the branding, was going to start going bigger. And I just had to make some tweaks to the software. And it was really good. And that's when the wheels fell off. I just couldn't move.
Whoa.
I just was done. And I started wondering, am I depressed? You know, you're reading all these things about COVID where people are, they would say languishing was the other, maybe you're not burned out or
That was depressed. Something that Adam Grant really pushed. Yeah. He's like, hey.
We're languishing. Yeah. Wasn't it? I thought that's what it was. I think when we were all talking the last time, that was kind of what I was trying to figure out what the next steps were. And I was, guys, I'd make the to-do list every day and know what I needed to do to execute. And I've always executed. Couldn't figure out what the hell was going on. And it just died. And it's still sitting there. And I couldn't figure out what was going on. And I kept, but the awareness of the autism and the ADHD and the dyslexia. The ADHD always knew, but the autism and dyslexia made me have to like kind of reevaluate everything and start looking. And at that time, I became more aware of the neurodiversity stuff coming out.
How did you actually come to that? Like, what was that moment? Like, how did you find out that you were on the spectrum? Like, what, like, that to me feel, because you were what, 46, 47?
Yep. Here, this is a good story. I start reading about this stuff. I'm like, because I'm searching. I'm like, why the fuck can't I finish this to-do list? Why can't I get, and I'd passed that. It had been like a couple months. I'm just sitting there struggling. And I was almost past, and I was just like, all right, fuck, I'm done. I don't know what, I've never not been able to fight through something like this. And so I'm reading and reading, and I'm like, am I? And I'm reading more, and more's coming out at this time. This beginning of the spectrum changing from Asperger's into the spectrum, and there's more coming out. That's how I found out. And I need to start learning more.
Finally, there's a like some a label for why,
or just an understanding, happening. Right?
Like
just
an understanding to a lot of stuff. And I think for a lot of people,
Did it open up? I mean, you were talking about all of these various divergences, various, you know, tangents, mm-hmm. That one could be on. Mm-hmm. Right. And like, how do you sort of find your particular path, your particular profile, and find the tools to resolve? Are there assessments? How do they like?
Assessments are bad.
I don't even know how to ask this question.
The online stuff to figure it out. Well, there's a lot of people self-diagnosing right now, because to get into a therapist who's actually credible and it's been trained, I mean, you can be misdiagnosed, which can be worse.
Honestly, it makes sense that, I mean, somebody knows themselves better, but obviously, like,
they don't know the questions to ask. They can fool themselves too. It's good and bad. There's a lot of information. Same thing WebMD.
We were talking about IEPs. There's a reason why IEPs are assessments are coming from multiple angles.
Yeah.
And as an adult, presumably, who's realizing or finding out that they're on the autism spectrum, you don't have those kinds of resources that you might have in school in 2023.
No, it's a fascinating world right now. And our, assuming there's entrepreneurs listening to it, this is, a lot of them are wondering these things. I mean, that's why you see a lot of entrepreneurs who are ADHD and autistic
dyslexic. It would be nice to know why I'm such a fucking shit show all the time.
Well, but you're not a shit show. You have the perception that you are because you've been told that that's the way things... The systems are set up by people who are, the world around us is set up by the people who are in charge. I mean, if you have influence and have power, you create the systems. So if the majority of people's brains, it's like thinking of a field of animals. There's 1,000 elk out there and there's 4 lions. In the human world, the 1,000 elk set things up. And the systems and everything is set up to eat grass all day, eat grass, migrate, do this. If that's the standard for what is right in the world, then the lions look like they're a shit show. But they're not. They're just different. You know, that's what it is. So, and see how you even said that. That's why I'm a shit show. No, you're not. You just operate differently than, you know what I'm saying? Ryan. No, it's just...
I definitely operate differently.
Yeah. And what's wrong with that? There's nothing wrong with that. And we can go down a whole other path.
Yeah.
But I think what we were going with though, and we can come back to that is though, what I learned, why the wheels fell off with Blocked was as I became aware of the autism and the dyslexia, I started having to reevaluate things. And I found the reason that it wasn't depression. It wasn't languishing. I'm in a basement by myself working on the software. If I have a technical partner and a teammate working with me, building it all day,
I remember
shit was moving. Yeah. Shit was moving. I built some cool stuff fast with him. And he was like, you're on top of it. I don't get specs like this. This is working. And then it's done and I'm fall off. And when you reevaluate it and you start looking at your daughter, who during the pandemic, my wife had to sit in the room, just sitting there. I had to tell her what to do. Just had to sit in the room with her to make her do her work. As soon as she'd leave the room, daughter wouldn't work. It's called body doubling. And it's very important to ADHD and some autistic people just to have someone else around you. And so when I have someone working with me, I can execute. When I'm by myself, I can't. Literally, it's like saying to a person who, and not to be crude, but they don't have legs, climb up this ladder, climb up these stairs. They can't. They literally can't. My brain has a gap that just can't do work when I'm by myself.
Is it specific types of work or is it any work?
Pretty much any work.
Really?
I have to have some sort of other form of someone involved in some other accountability around me. And not a boss. I just need somebody else. Yeah.
I guess I should rephrase that. Like, maybe I'm trying to put myself into this situation to.
Are you trying to self-diagnose right now?
No, I'm not trying to self-diagnose. I'm just trying to empathize, trying to relate. Yeah. You know, so you know, I that happens to me occasionally, where I, you know, if I don't have somebody working alongside or depending on me to do something right now, I'm going to do something else or I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
Or, you know, and it's like, I know that and it fucking sucks and I don't know why, what's holding me back from doing it. But there are things that I'm totally self-driven. Like, like for example, Eric and I have spent the last 2 weekends retiling my bathroom that I didn't want to do, but I'm like fucking into it, man. Like house projects. Part of the reason why I'm,
but so did you notice who you said you did it with?
Oh, God damn it, Ryan.
But
you did now, it with Eric and your wife is
now I'm doing it on my own, but I just want to make my friend proud.
But okay. But he, but he's still involved though. He's still involved. And do you have, a significant other that is impacted by this?
Yeah,
very much.
And, yeah, that's it. Then you still have another person.
She's going, when the fuck is my shower going
to
be done?
She has to smell my BO from non-showers.
It's messed up.
So was the
blowing my mind right now.
Was COVID and when you were working on Blocked, was that the first time you had really been in that sort of scenario?
Yeah,
where you
first
were,
time like, ever
in your basement.
Couldn't figure it out.
Yeah.
Because every time else I've succeeded, every time else I've executed, I've gotten shit done. I don't stop. I don't just, you know.
I think Zeppelin's.
I love it that he's in here. So yeah, I'm hoping they're the panting fucking in the background.
Air compressor just kicked on our roasting machine and it's
he doesn't like it. Is that why he's in here?
Yeah, that's why he freaked out a little bit because he's
a little nervous.
He's a little nervous. He's scared. Anyway, so
you could have been a wolf.
What's interesting is that that's
entrepreneurship right there.
And I wonder how many people during that time period, I mean, we all were fucked up a little bit because we were forced to like work in our remote basements or corners or, you know, we converted our I feel like I was just breathing real weird. They're just
I don't have headphones on, so I'm glad I didn't have to.
We were all forced in like these kind of corners of our spaces, right? It was like you've carved out a little space in your house or whatever. And I think we all were sort of going through these weird moments of disconnection, depression, figuring that shit out. But it's fascinating that like what you found out through that time period was like, oh, I don't function this way. Like I just don't work.
What's fascinating about this neurodiversity and different types of brains and how we work, I can relate it back to my kids again. So some of the practices that we learned with my daughter that we had to do, my daughter is like the brain carbon copy of me, same stuff. The practices that we applied for her, we also then applied it to my son, who has none of the stuff. He's what you would call neurotypical, and it improved him as well. Mm-hmm. So to your point, everybody can be impacted by certain things and certain accommodations or supports that I have to have. Mm-hmm. Others will benefit from it.
Well, isn't that the whole reason they call it the spectrum? I mean, technically we're all on the spectrum, right?
Nope.
So I was once told, and this might be the old school way of thinking, my cousin has Asperger's, and this is some weird Byington family history, but we didn't know I didn't know he existed till he was like 25.
Yeah.
My uncle had these kids out of wedlock. It was this weird, like, he kept them
out of wedlock.
Yeah, well, they come from a very Catholic family, so it was like a big deal that this had happened. So anyway,
he was a bastard child.
Two of them.
I mean that in the Lord of the Rings sense.
Yes, exactly.
Or sorry, the Game of Thrones sense.
Yes. But long story short, the first time I met him, it was this, like, I was blown away by his retention of facts and, like, he could recite our family history, essentially, and, like, knew things about my childhood that, as he was saying, it was, like, bringing memories back to me. I was like, holy fuck, dude, I haven't thought about that in 20 years. And I am remembering it as you're recounting it to me, but it was this person that I had met for the first time. So long story short, we met Josh. We had, and there was this sort of introduction to the family about, and this was, I was in my 20s, and it was the closest experience I'd ever had to somebody on the spectrum. And the way it was recounted to me at the time was, we're all sort of on the spectrum, but it's a matter of where you fall on the spectrum. That's probably an old school way of thinking about it, or maybe it was a false way of thinking about it. But I guess my question is, like, One, I think you're
going to attempt to quote unquote normalize, socially normalize that, or like make it more. I'm curious. I'm trying to like piggyback on your question.
And I think what I could see you starting to respond, and I'm wondering if it's going to be around like the thinking on this is changing, but also
yes,
how. I think this COVID and your experience is just an interesting way to kind of look at, we were all impacted in some ways, mm-hmm. but how was that much different from a neurodiverse, right? Mm-hmm. So how is it that much different for a neurodiverse person versus a neurotypical?
Yeah, I think, and there's lots of ways, just so from a terminology is kind of important. Mm-hmm. There's a term called neurodivergent. Mm-hmm. I don't particularly like that term. I mm-hmm. like the term neurodistinct.
Okay.
Saying neurodiverse, kind of, we're all neurodiverse and neurodiversity. So you're probably using the term more neurodivergent is mm-hmm. it's known most. The information that we have now, and now that I've been diagnosed ADHD in the late 90s to where I am now and seeing things change so much, it's based on the information we have now. And what my knowledge is that, no, not everybody's a little bit ADHD. Not everybody's a little bit on the spectrum. Mm. There are differences in how our brains are wired. And I think I feel comfortable saying that because all you have to do is look at, like, let's use sharks. I mean, when we talk about diversity, a lot of them look the same. A lot of them. Mm-hmm. You know, a tiger shark and a great white shark kind of look the same. Then you throw in a hammerhead shark mm-hmm. and you're like, what the hell is that? Mm-hmm.
It's so an alien compared to
So there are clear differences, I mm-hmm. think.
Or a whale shark.
Yeah, which isn't truly, I don't think he, is it a shark? I don't know.
They're not whales, but they're more sharks.
I don't know what they are, to be honest. But I don't know. He's that the point.
Biology fucking
knows. But there's so many different types of, there's so much diversity in our world. And mm-hmm. then you can clearly see a difference between a deciduous tree and a pine tree. Mm-hmm. They're both trees. But I think there are clear lines of delineation at some point where there has to be a break where you aren't. But to your point, you know, is water good for all sharks, whether it's a hammerhead? Yes. Mm-hmm. So and I think that's some of the things we're finding out in just society.
But not all water and not all temperatures of water.
Exactly. And
not all levels of salinity.
You got it. So there are certain things that are critical that are mission critical. I needed someone to be working with me.
Yeah.
And if not, I fail. It just dies. Whereas if someone is working with my son, it does help him. Or if he, you know, organize.
Because we're all humans and you want to have some sort of, we can't just live in isolation, but yeah. And what you're saying is in your case, it's a necessity.
Absolutely. Well, I learned it was, I had no idea.
Yeah.
But we figured out, oh, put someone with me, stuff starts happening again. Yep. Without it, done.
Have you spent much time reflecting on this now, the knowledge you have now and what your journey has been in starting companies, selling your company? Like, have you looked back now at your career and what you've done as an entrepreneur and reflected on the knowledge that you have now about being
neurodivergent? Yeah, neurodistinct. Yeah. Absolutely. That's been my focus.
Yeah.
Is how do you help? I wasn't sure if I wanted to do it in schools or in business. And I think businesses move faster. Mm-hmm. There's some bad parts about working with this, but yes, the whole neurodiversity at work space is something that's incredibly important to me now. Mm-hmm. How, because there's, at the end of the day in companies, there's a lot of, it's discriminatory stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, people are being oppressed and are marginalized and discriminated against constantly.
Without a specific label or way, like quick way to identify.
Yeah, you don't know.
They're,
I don't look autistic. So right. How do you know? But
right.
But you're discriminating. Or
you're not like self-harming or, you know, screaming out in the middle of the, you know, meeting or whatever. Like, yeah.
That's called masking.
Masking.
People have learned to not, like, I stim. If you guys ever notice, a lot of times I'll play with my beard. You've probably seen me do it at lunch. I haven't
stopped since you.
Yeah. It's called stimming.
I feel seen.
Yeah, it's called stimming when you're. My wife always knows when I'm thinking.
Stimulating your.
Yeah, it's a term, but I learned that that doesn't do well in a meeting with a lot of people that aren't like me. So I mask, and now you've got like 15 things and that I'm
you're
trying.
Thinking about that, but you're suppressing.
So the energy to just survive in a world where no one else acts and does stuff like you, and I know that if you can get that into corporations, where hey. A perfect example is, let's think of someone that's being going through an interview process and they're autistic and they don't make eye contact. Well, they're not a cultural fit. You know, they're not looking somebody in the eye and having, you know, looking directly at you, and they don't show up to the beer thing after a night. Well, they don't like social stuff. Mm-hmm. So job descriptions, interviewing, how you communicate and collaborate. There's a whole, some of the brightest, most productive, well-meaning, honest, best people are being, you know, what is it, like 80% of autistic people are unemployed. I forget the stats. I should know those stats. 70% of unemployed, 80% are underemployed or something. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous. And that's just one group within the neurodiversity space.
Which kind of makes sense why so many entrepreneurs end up.
Yes, that's exactly it. Because they don't fit in.
Like, Yeah, it's like, I don't know what the fuck else I'm supposed to do.
Once a company gets big enough, you don't hire a bunch of innovative people. You hire a bunch of people that will follow the rules and just do what everybody will follow the process and citizens.
And that's when we bounce.
Yeah, that's when you bounce. I mean, I'm pointing at Kelly right now.
Eric bounces. I bounce.
But, you know, but that's why we don't fit in the neurotypical systems, the school systems. We don't fit in the big corporate systems. And corporations, you know, that's why Nike didn't build the running shoe and Ultra did. And they're probably taking a huge market share because a company wasn't innovative because they didn't have the right kind of people to be innovative.
What's interesting, though, right?
I freaking love Ultra, man. Telling you.
But what's interesting is like Phil Knight, who started Nike, was the guy who didn't fit in.
That's it.
And now they're the corporation where fuck the corporation. We're going to go start Ultra.
Yeah.
Is that Matt Damon?
Yeah, Matt Damon.
That's it. You can see the cycle.
It's a cycle, yeah.
Matt Damon's on the spectrum.
Once you start building.
That's what
Let's get Matt Damon on here and talk about the spectrum with
him. What's it like playing someone who's on the spectrum started a company?
Wait, does he play Phil Knight?
I think so.
Oh,
I thought you just agreed with me. He's a guy who played. It's like the movie.
I thought you were just saying the movie with Matt Damon.
I think it's the guy who started Nike and kind of working with Michael Jordan to get Nike off the ground.
Sounds right.
Nike off the ground. Anyone?
And here's the fascinating thing to me. Now that I'm in this and I'm learning about this, the VC world is constantly trying to make companies act neurotypical.
Fuck that, man.
That's what I see. They don't even want to talk
elaborate on that. What do you...
Follow the blueprint on how to do a pitch deck. You need to have your finances done a certain way. You need to show up and act a certain way, you know... Mm-hmm. The banking and that type of mentality is like so anti a lot of them, not all of them. And they don't understand neurodiversity. They don't understand ADHD and autism. I've even talked to a VC person. I said, I want to talk to you about this. And he said, and he's a very well-meaning, good person. I wouldn't touch that with a 10-foot pole. Because they see it as like mental health and mental illness. Oh, and it's not.
Wouldn't touch the whole topic,
the topic of needing to address autism, ADHD, and so forth in entrepreneurialism and being aware of it as VCs to support it to make their companies that in their portfolio better.
Because they've spent all this time trying to figure out how to like get into a company started by a neurodiverse person.
I think they think it's touchy-feely, warm stuff, and they don't want to do it. Hmm. Or wellness or something. And I don't think he's alone. But it's amazing
probably on a personal level, but they have influences greater than themselves that are causing them to make those decisions.
Who knows? I don't think a lot of VCs are entrepreneurs.
That's true. That's
yeah. true.
So I don't think their brains think like we do. That's what I don't know. The neurodiversity movement.
Finance nerds and spreadsheet nerds and.
Yeah, I don't. You probably know more than I do. Because I haven't done well with them. Because I'm like, I'm like, this doesn't work. I'm not. Mm-hmm. It's not working for me. Mm-hmm. I don't want to play their game.
Yeah.
I want. Take you from your beautiful mind to. I need you to operate like a robot and churn out some money.
Which I don't. Remember EverCommerce, that's where I worked. I loved it. My mind really wants that order and structure and so forth.
I like being around people who are like that.
That's okay. So now you just hit it. That's what needs to get figured out. How do you put the right people together? Meaning, I have a very healthy and happy marriage. My wife is the most neurotypical person, and we work well together because we're complements. Most people don't figure out that being different is good. And how do you use each other's strengths? And a lot of entrepreneurs are what you call spiky profiles, really good at certain things and terrible at other things. Mm-hmm. And so you got to get the right teammates around you.
I like that spiky profile.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, that's that sort of body doubling in a way of like, and it's like putting you in a room with a little bit of structure, a person that has some structure to them, or like that could be
that's body doubling on steroids. Yeah.
The winning recipe.
I'd love to be running a VC and say, let's put together, you know, ADHD Ryan with neurotypical.
How about neurodiversified?
Yeah, well, that's some of the things you think about what those early, what early stage investors do. What early stage investors do. They put in money so you can hire, right? Mm-hmm. That's the main thing that gets. They don't even know how. I mean, how do you hire a team that is got the pieces that's like a puzzle piece?
Yeah,
they don't even understand that, and they're just throwing. Go hire a bunch of people. There's a lot that could be learned, and that's the support around that could be, whoever gets smart and figures this out is going to win.
Well, I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens with. To me, there's this transition happening in the venture world a little bit where we're starting to, I think the Silicon Valley venture mindset has run a part of its course. And I think.
Do you think they've reached their next evolution though?
No, no, I think
The two most valuable wealthy entrepreneurs in Silicon Valley currently are both neurodivergent.
Yeah, but where I'm going with this is that I think the models that you're talking about, so there was like this boom of companies out of Silicon Valley and San Francisco and the coasts that led to all these venture firms being created that were like, we're going to take the model that was created around this explosion of opportunity and wealth and growth. And a lot of it was there were these valuations that were, based on bullshit, and it was based on like data and based on user bases and based, it was this whole unicorn mindset, right? Of like, everybody's got to be a $1 billion company. Everybody's got to be a unicorn company. And it was, they were trying to templatize it, right? They were trying to say like, fit into our box and fit into the system that has worked for 10 years or so.
Knowing that only 10% of them are going to become unicorns, but they're thinking we got to try and get everybody too, knowing you're only going to get 10% of them.
We've got this square template and we're going to try to force as many people as we can through that square template. And only 10% are going to make it through. But those 10% that make it through are going to be $1 billion valuations and make us a fuckload of money. And so that I think has become this sort of model and system that, what I hear you saying is like, people are going, I'm not going to touch things with a 10-foot pole because I know it works. But I do think that it's kind of what we were touching on before we started recording, like society's changing.
Yeah.
COVID seemed to accelerate that.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that like we're going to have to start to think really differently around what kind of businesses we're building, how we're building them, how we're funding them,
mm-hmm.
what the process is behind all of this. And so I think there's a big shift that we're at the beginning of right now. And
I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens with how that changes.
I think you're 100% right. And the same VC that I spoke with that said he wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole, a year later, we have a conversation and he's talking about hiring. And I said, well, you don't even know how to interview someone that's neurodistinct, you know, your firms. And I think the light bulb went on for him. He's like, oh, I'm realizing, I think he's interested now. Mm.
So because he might miss out on
an opportunity
for a kick-ass employee that he might otherwise ignore because they didn't make eye contact.
Or not realize that he has 100 employees that they hired and 20 of them already are neurodivergent and that they're not supporting them properly. They're masking. They don't have the success structures around them. They didn't make sure that Ryan, you know, there's a whole thing called universal design around how to support it, and it's just not in companies right now. Everybody has to fit in the cultural fit and you have to do a meeting a certain way and it's all old school stuff and things need to evolve.
Yeah.
So
the startup cult, this is your work family nonsense.
Mm-hmm. You show up to the happy hour.
Get the bullshit out of here.
You know, how do you hire someone?
Well, again, it's interesting because I think the COVID stuff accelerated some of that.
Remote work is huge.
Well, and even
for neurodivergent, work, they don't want to be in there.
Like I spent last week and this week at some conference and in person sort of things, and a handful of us were talking. It's like, this is just awkward now. Like, it's gotten a little bit better, but there's just this like weird.
You work with a bunch of like total nerds, and I mean that in the most
nerds.
I like nerds.
Yeah,
nerds and totals. People that are just like, I want to build cool shit, not fucking talk to people.
But the people that aren't even on the like nerdy scientific side of things are going, man, we got used to like just not being I guess it's not being in our own holes, but
you were home more.
Yeah, we were home more. We were in these like spaces where things got sort of normalized and now to go back out into like these environments where you're like with 500 people and you're making small talk and trying to figure out how to like, there's almost like a bullshit sensor that has been installed in all of us.
Yes.
Where it's like, wait a minute.
Every time we go to, you and me, Eric, have been to a networking event, we're like, no one wants to be here.
Well, and it's like, it's like, how do we get past the bullshit faster? And I think that's what it's almost like, let's skip all the small talk and just jump straight into the meat.
That's
and
a
like get
very
into it.
Autistic thing, by the way.
Yeah. And so
I am incapable at small talk.
Yeah.
Time for you to get your assessment.
is there an online forum?
Well, you can probably self-assess and start just reading about that stuff. I mean, I can't either. I don't do well with it. I literally have to have a few beers in me to do small talk. And I'm just.
So that's why you had to get drunk before you.
I mean, I also like the feeling I get from beer, but same. Honestly, same.
I need to build, you know, it's an anxiety thing because it's not my natural operating thing. Mm-hmm. It's not like I don't mind. I like people. I like talking, but small talk, how's, you know, beautiful day today? No.
It's not a beautiful day and only because you're trying to engage.
Well, when people ask, when someone asks, how are you doing? I can't, if I'm not doing well, I'm not going to say, great, everything's fine. Mm-hmm. People can play that politics, play the game. The game in corporate America does not work for me.
Yeah.
Telling how am I doing? I can't just say if shit's going sideways in my home, I can't say things are fine. But no one wants to hear that. So you mask.
What I'm learning is neurotypical people are a bunch of sociopaths. Because they can just
I don't know about that, honestly, but like I overwhelm people when I skip past the small talk, and I know that I'm self-aware enough to know when I'm like a lot for people.
Yeah.
So I, to use a term that I learned tonight, mask to fit into that situation, because like, I know I'm going to overwhelm you unless I know you well, I'm just going to be myself. Like I'm getting married this year. We're the three of us and a bunch of other guys are going to my bachelor party. I'm going to be me and I'm really looking forward to that. But, you know, I have to mask myself regularly and just to like not.
That's called not being authentic. And that's really hard not to be your authentic.
Being disingenuous sucks.
So the whole point of the neurodiversity at work movement is that we can start bringing our authentic self to work. And there's a whole.
But do it in a productive way that's not going to be, you know, too. This is the hard part, too. It's like, I don't want to be the fucking disruptive kid at my school so no one else can learn. You know what I mean?
But if everybody understands who you are and is accepting, you won't be disruptive. You may bring some value with your disruption.
Yeah.
That otherwise wouldn't have been heard if you're masking and sitting there going, I can't say this. I can't say this. And I think there's some what's called a double empathy thing within the neurodiversity space, meaning sometimes I don't understand how my neurotypical son's brain works. And I'm like, why is he doing this? I have a problem as well. So the training and understanding and awareness around neurodiversity is both ways. I mean, there's some need for people like myself to better understand neurotypical brains and how they process information and how they talk. And I think we were talking about this earlier. It really comes down to, we need better acceptance in our country and in our world and in work. We need to have a little bit more love and patience and grace. You know, and forgive people. That's when you're talking about talking too much, you know, and being disruptive, they need to maybe not judge you and forgive you a little bit, because that's just who you are. And when we talk about them being sociopaths, you know, we're joking, but maybe we need to forgive them a little bit for the fact that they can play the political game and
this
not.
This is where the balance comes into play, and like the work on neurodivergent people's
on both sides
comes. It's like, yeah, I'm going to forgive you for not understanding that I'm, you know, don't think the same way.
It's not much different than talking about somebody in the LGBTQ plus movement, or someone that's maybe black, and people have been marginalized and oppressed. Sure. And so, you know, it's been happening for autistic people, ADHD people, you know, but we kind of do it back a little bit when we look at, I mean, I can tell you a lot of times in the work world, I've looked across people and tables that were maybe my bosses or had hired, and I'm like, you're an idiot.
This is kind of an idiot, and
I know so much more than you, and I need to do, and you, how do you have this job? You only got this job because you know how to play the political game and you can kiss ass. Mm-hmm. And that's not right for me to think. Now, I know that I might be right, but that's still not good.
Yeah. This is kind of, this may be an inappropriate analogy, but it makes me think, because there's you know, a whole industry emerging probably later than it should have in diversity, equity,
DEI,
and this seems like related to that, but what you're talking about is, you know, finding ways to educate people and to engage in ongoing conversations it seems to me like it's equally as important for neurodivergent people to educate people as it is for people who to be open to be educated, or like
critical,
like open people's openness to learn from someone and my willingness to teach and not assume that they should know.
They're not,
you know, because that's a losing game. If I'm just going to scream at you because you don't understand me, that's not going to be an effective way to build. Yeah.
No one wants to be told they're wrong and you need to change.
Right.
You've got to model it and bring it in a non-confrontational manner.
Yeah.
And the entrepreneurship part of this, though, what we were talking about is how my thing failed. In a business world, there's so many things that cause people like myself to fail, because there aren't the support structures or there's not understanding and so forth. So, I mean, in the entrepreneurial world, that happens with VCs, that may be why a company fails, you know, it's just, there's so many layers to this.
So what would be next for you now? Like, do you want to take one of these ideas and try to figure out how to run with it? How is the understanding you've come to now like influence kind of what you're thinking about next?
I think I was a little ahead, and I think I'm trying to work to build community around the neurodiversity space and in the DEI and B space, because there's a lot of intersectionality between someone that's neurodiverse, someone that may be of, you know, any different marginalized groups. Neurodiversity is the only one that's truly intersectional across all. So I can't be African-American, but an African-American could be neurodivergent. Mm-hmm. And so it's the one that's truly intersectional across all marginalized groups. So yeah. I think it's a big one for that. So that's a space I want to play in, and I want to continue to support the community in that space. Mm-hmm. And some of the things that I've built that are in the shelves sitting back here can fit. I just haven't figured out how it's going to fit. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying, and I also know my understanding is if you can build more community and online and in other places and build an audience, it's much easier to launch things to that audience mm-hmm. instead of launching something and then trying to build community mm-hmm. around it. Mm. So
people who are already already looking for, you know, guidance and resources in that space.
That's what I'm building right now. Cool. Hmm. Yeah, I'm actively involved with it's the first one in the country, the Colorado Neurodiversity Chamber of Commerce. Hmm. I'm on the board there, and I'm just trying to help them build community and understand what it takes to build community around.
How long has that organization been around?
8 months.
Oh, so you're building brand new. That's its own venture in itself.
Yeah. I'm supporting them. There was three founders for that, and I spoke at their first event and been on their board for a couple months. Yeah. Helping them try and grow this and support, you know, and that's a process. I mean, you've got to get companies aware of it, but they're not ready to do the things, but they just got to start being aware. And it's change is a process. I mean, I have a child who's neurodistinct. She's 14. I understand looking at the change around the racial stuff in our country. And it's, you know, the '60s is when it 50s, 60s, it started, and we're still dealing with it now, you know, 60 years later, 70 years later. So this is not going to happen quickly. Mm-hmm. The change that needs to happen,
but someone has to initiate it.
Well, and my hope is maybe when she's older, it's a lot better.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
When she goes to work or she's in whatever, she's an entrepreneur, you know, and she's talking to VCs, and they better understand, here's the money for hiring, and we've got supports to help you, you know, hire, you know, do proper interviewing and writing proper job descriptions for neurodistinct people. Mm-hmm. And okay, these are your areas. I understand that. Let's put these support people around you to maximize our company within the portfolio. Let's mm-hmm. give you the proper support structures around you, because they understand it.
Right.
That's the way I'm looking at it.
Mm-hmm. Can you make a more sweeping plug for the Chamber of Commerce and how people can find out about it?
It is cndcc.org. So Colorado Neurodiversity Chamber of Commerce.org is their website. They have 60 members already that are, that have signed up and are spending, and they're continuing to do live events, to support the membership and continue to grow the membership. The founders have been really impressed with who they are and what they're doing in the community. They're all involved in the autism space with different connections to autism, but it's not just autism. There's ADHD, dyslexia, Tourette's. I mean, there's just a neurodiversity is wide.
Sure.
And there's a lot of pieces to it. So, and they're the first one in the country and maybe in the world that we know of and it's just new. And Colorado to me is like if I had my way with it, Colorado should be the leader in neurodiversity. Mm. I mean, I just think it's the state is full of us. Mm. I really do feel like that's, you know, much more than other places in the country. Mm. It's. It's just there. Mm-hmm. And I think there's an opportunity if the state were to get aggressive in this, they could push it. The state, the actual government could do stuff. Policy could be around it to support it.
This definitely seems like a kind of initiative that the governor would be into.
I if I've said many times, hoping so, and I think I even said it to you, if I could get someone to let me knock on his door and just let him, me talk with him for 10 minutes.
Jared Polis or any of
I think they get it. They're doing the, some of the things.
Come talk to Ryan Mull.
And this isn't some sort of, I think it also is across both sides of the aisle too. I mean, I don't think this is a political thing.
They'll find some way to politicize it, but until I don't think it is.
Cause I think it is intersectional across, you know, I had lunch with somebody yesterday that I know for a fact is a registered Republican, and but their child is autistic and they want the support structures around them. So it isn't, you know, and I don't lean that side, but we have a common thing. So it's
really honestly, that's kind of a beautiful way to bridge some of those barriers that we're
a lot of
constantly fighting with. And honestly, like how many times do you just not want to engage with people just because you already know their political affiliation? But if you have this something in common, I had a really great conversation with my mom the other night, who was connecting with my sister-in-law's mother just to talk about how much they loved their grandchildren, and they could not be more diametrically different in politically and otherwise, but that was their thing. And it's like, cool. You're talking about how neurodiversity, I'm sorry, I forgot the
term, it takes a while.
Yeah, the term you used, neurodiversity doesn't necessarily, you know, it spans all races and ethnicities and sexual orientations and everything. It's like, it's one of
intersectional.
And if that's my way into a conversation with somebody who I don't necessarily agree with on the political spectrum, that's fucking great.
Yeah. Well, and it goes back to what we talked about, just a lot of love and understanding and grace.
Yeah.
And getting past that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ryan, this has been such an awesome conversation. I want to continue it, and I hope we will offline. But yeah, I'm fired up about what you're doing. Thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on. This has been fun.
Yeah.
It went a lot of different directions, but you know, I think that's
just like brains, right? Yeah. Going all kinds of different directions. But thanks again for coming back on. And
hope we talked about enough shit.
Let's figure out.